I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Legislation's been introduced at the State House that provides additional protections for people who encounter sexual harassment in the workplace. One of the goals of the bill is to make certain that people who report cases of sexual harassment don't face retaliation by their employers. The bill also prevents employers from using practices that discourage the reporting of sexual harassment at their companies. Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland Hansis is the lead sponsor of the bill.
We have a moment in time here where we can start blowing this open and really, you know, talking more honestly about the extent of hostile work environments in Vermont.
Will this bill help reduce the incidence of sexual harassment in Vermont workplaces? And what are some of the most important protections that people need to deal with cases of sexual harassment on the job? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland Hansis, and also Lisa Senecal, who is a member of the Vermont Commission on Women. She's also the co-founder of the Marin Group, a company that's dedicated to protecting the rights of women who have suffered physical, emotional, or economic harm due to sexual harassment and assault in the workplace. Great to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having us.
So, Lisa, over the past few months, we've had many, many cases of sexual harassment in the workplace at the national level. Can you give me a sense of how prevalent you feel this issue is in Vermont at this time?
I don't think there's any reason to believe that prevalence in Vermont is any different than what the national statistics are. And studies are showing that it's somewhere between 6 and 7 in 10 women report being sexually harassed, slightly less for men reporting sexual harassment, and then even higher than that for members of the LGBTQ population.
And do you think this is a problem that's gotten worse over the years?
I think it's a problem that more people are recognizing is an actual problem. I don't know that the cases are more frequent. I certainly hope they are being reported more frequently. I know that the EEOC has seen an uptick in reporting even prior to the Harvey Weinstein, Bill O'Reilly revelations.
Sarah, as we mentioned, you're the lead sponsor of this bill. Have other states tried to deal with this issue, or is Vermont in the forefront of dealing with cases of sexual harassment in the workplace?
Well, we did quite a bit of research during the formation stages of this bill and looked at model language that other states are also looking at this time. And I don't know how to gauge relative to what's on the docket in other states, but I will say that many of the components of our bill in Vermont are kind of a sampling of some of the more I think helpful pieces that we've seen and borrowed from other states. We did a great deal of talking with folks who have experienced workplace sexual harassment, myself included, obviously, and really just wanted to put together a package of reforms that doesn't swing the pendulum in the opposite direction, but really just brings us brings the energy of this moment to the point where we can encourage better dialogue between people in the workplace in order to head off harassment before it becomes pervasive and toxic in the work environment and before it starts to drive people to make decisions that really harm their economic future either. And so I think what we've landed on here is something that doesn't dramatically change the landscape, but really does offer some better avenues for people.
And you've got dozens of sponsors on this bill, Republicans, Democrats, progressives. Is that a sign that there are a lot of people in the Vermont House who feel very strongly that this issue needs to be dealt with?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And honestly, you know, there would have been more co-sponsors on that bill if I had had more time. There were a lot of people who wanted to be on it, but I needed to get the bill submitted and get it before the committee for them to have time during this tight legislative session. But, you know, I think the fact that you see Democrats, progressives, independents, and Republicans all together as co-sponsors really is an indication that that we're trying to bring this to the to kind of a common core and find a way to move forward in a positive way that all people, regardless of their political bent, can agree to.
So as you look at the situation now, what are some of the areas where people who want to report complaints of sexual harassment on the job need some additional protections? What needs to be done?
Well, you know, there needs to be a recognition within within workplaces around Vermont that talking about sexual harassment doesn't need to be a career-ending conversation. And so, you know, I kind of use the analogy of, you know, when you're a kindergartner getting on the school bus for the first time, you feel a whole lot better if you know you got your big sister who sits a couple rows back on the school bus, because if anybody's bugging you, she's going to tap them on the shoulder and say, knock it off. And so what we're trying to achieve here is the ability for there to be, you know, your big brother or your big sister a few rows back who can help you if you feel that something is crossing the line into harassment, can help you say, knock it off. And so that's kind of the core part of this bill that I think is important to changing the conversation.
Lisa, some of our listeners might be wondering, what constitutes sexual harassment? How do you differentiate that from maybe what some people might consider sexual misconduct or inappropriate behavior?
Well, sexual misconduct and inappropriate behavior would be included within sexual harassment. And it's really a broad spectrum of things. And it's varying degrees of how pervasive it is within an organization. So based on EEOC criteria, to be a case that can be brought before them, it needs to be persistent and pervasive. And that can be anything from inappropriate touching to things that would make your work environment feel hostile, like sexually suggestive or pornographic pinups being on the walls. It can be lewd comments being made to or about someone. And I think a lot of the time we tend to think of sexual harassment. You hear people when they're concerned about this going too far. They'll say, you know, I don't even feel like I can compliment someone anymore on how they look. And that's really not what we're talking about. And I think it's sort of a red herring. Most people know the difference between giving a compliment and saying something that is sexually inappropriate. If you're someone who isn't quite sure that you know the difference between those things, then you probably should just not attempt to pay people compliments. And most of us really do understand what that difference is.
Carrie Brown, who's the executive director of the Vermont Commission on Women, gave some startling examples of sexual harassment at the press conference that was held to announce the introduction of this bill. One was a welder was asked by a co-worker to take a shower with him, and when she complained, she was moved to a less desirable department with less pay. Another example was a woman who worked in the retail industry who had a coworker who made overt sexual comments and wanted to take naked photos of her.
Yeah, it's incredibly shocking that we are in 2018 talking about things that sound like they wouldn't have even been appropriate in the Mad Men era. But they're absolutely still going on, and they're going on in Vermont. Those cases that Carrie cited in her comments were actual things that have happened within the last year in Vermont, and I have a list of many others that have been submitted to the Vermont Commission on Women. It's amazing that these things are still happening, and that very often when women or this happens to men and LGBTQ folks as well, but when someone is a target of sexual harassment, it's very common that when they bring forward a complaint, even if they don't do it in a formal way, they're perceived as a troublemaker within the organization. And one of the things that we do try to address with this legislation is in many settlement agreements, there are clauses that they're known as do not darken my door clauses, which means that if you have brought forward a sexual harassment complaint, you have a settlement with the organization, and very often you're no longer working there at this point, that you are precluded from ever applying for work at that organization again, and not this, just the organization, but any of its affiliates. So this idea that the problem in the workplace, the trouble that's being caused, is being caused by people who bring forward the complaints instead of it sitting squarely on the shoulders of the person who is committing the harassment is part of the pervasive problem that we have.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Rob, who's calling from Burlington. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I have a quick question in terms of high-profile individuals that have been found to be sexual harassers get booted out of their organizations but walk away with large severance packages. One individual, Laurent Potovin, who was a former Burton executive, was recently let go from Lululemon but walked away with a sizable severance package. Is there any way through policy or legislation to figure out how to claw those parachutes back?
So I would love to answer that question. Those kinds of stories that you hear really, really kind of smack of a deep injustice because, as Lisa was just saying before, oftentimes it's the person who brought accusations who feels a great deal of pressure and blame and even sometimes some structural and legal ramifications as well. We didn't put any components with respect to that in this bill, and it's not to say that those aren't things that we should think about correcting in the future. But I wanted to start first and foremost with the goal of really being able to get us beyond the point where somebody who's being harassed has to make a choice between continuing their job or making a complaint of harassment, and really try to get to the upstream side of this.
And sir, is that what ultimately this comes down to, that a lot of people have to make that decision?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you are, you know, a single mom and you know, maybe you're working in a restaurant, you're a wait server, and, you know, your organization has this culture of harassing behavior that you feel really uncomfortable with, chances are you are having to think very carefully about whether you can afford to have your, you know, Saturday dinner shift taken away because, you know, the manager is best buddies with the person who's been harassing you. And these are economic decisions that have real world impacts on Vermonters and on their family budgets. And that's really offensive.
Lisa, do you think that we would find that there are certain industries where this is a bigger problem than others?
I wouldn't say it's particular to an industry, other than we know that anywhere where there is a culture and a employee makeup that is heavily one gender or the other, you end up with more issues. And more often than not, it's workplaces are going to be more heavily male than they are female. One of the reactions that some people have had, and I know it's concerns that people have, is a backlash to the Me Too and Time's Up movements, is that people will be less inclined to have women in the workplace, as though that is going to be a way, you know, if you have fewer women around, you'll have fewer incidents of sexual harassment. It's actually the opposite. The more women you have in an environment, the culture changes. It becomes more accepting, more respectful of different people and differences. And the rate of sexual harassment actually goes down.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at a bill introduced at the State House that provides additional protections for people who encounter sexual harassment in the workplace. Your thoughts about this? 1-800-639-2211. With us today, Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland-Hanses, who is the lead sponsor of the bill. Also, Lisa Senecal, who's a member of the Vermont Commission on Women. Let's talk to Stephen in Jericho. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Bob.
What's on your mind?
My friend just got fired from his job. He'd been working for about a month, and he asked for an afternoon off, and his supervisor granted him the afternoon off, and he was so happy that he hugged her and was fired. What are you going to do about that?
Lisa, you addressed this, that this issue is not about dealing with situations necessarily like that, that there's a much bigger issue at stake here.
There is a much bigger issue. I mean, that obviously not knowing any more of the details than you've provided us with your call, I don't want to comment on a specific situation like that. But it is important to understand that sexual harassment is a vastly underreported situation. The incidence of women or anyone coming forward with sexual harassment claims that are false is incredibly low. There just is not an incentive to bring these false allegations forward. We know statistically that a majority of people who bring forward a sexual harassment claim within a year will no longer work at that place of business, and they will have taken jobs that are either lower on the pay scale or with less responsibility than their previous job. There's also the stigma and shame that goes along with bringing forward a report on this. There's just, I can speak from very personal experience, there is nothing easy or that you are incentivized by, whether it is a potential settlement agreement or even a degree of vindictiveness. There just is not the upside to do this, that false reporting is a serious issue.
That's a fairly amazing statistic, that 75% of the people who file sexual harassment complaints feel like they're being retaliated against by their employer.
Retaliated against by their employer, by coworkers. It's not unusual that the person who had been the harasser continues to be employed with the organization, so the harassment in varying ways can continue. And you don't instantly, if the issue that allowed the harassment to happen in the first place is a cultural issue within the organization, that's not something that's going to change overnight or even change necessarily because one person is no longer at the company. It's generally a larger issue that allows an environment to be created where people feel as though this is appropriate and acceptable behavior.
Sarah, there's a provision in the bill that allows people who feel that they're working in a hostile work environment, to file a case with the Vermont Attorney General's office. Why is that so important?
Well, you know, a lot of Vermont's business landscape is very small companies who maybe don't have, an HR department or maybe, you work in a place where it is your HR manager or the owner of the small company who's actually doing the harassing behavior. In that case, it would be very difficult to open up the conversation around the culture in that workplace, and I think most of the women that I've talked to who have experienced sexual harassment would like to have been able to just make it stop. They don't want to go to the extent of causing harm to the harasser. They just want it to stop. And so, being able to go to the Attorney General's office and have the Attorney General, just send a notice to the company, just alerting them that there may be a cultural issue. Maybe they need to review their sexual harassment prevention practices. It gives the effect of that, big sister or big brother sitting a few rows behind you on the bus to say, you know, hey, there's something going on here, and you guys need to turn it around.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Sherry, who's calling from Stratford. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just want to give a shout out to those people who are thinking about going to their human resources department to complain of sexual harassment. The human resources department is not your friend. They are there to protect the institution. I learned this the hard way. I went to liaisons and everything else. And when it hit the fan, nobody recalled meeting with me. And I lost my job, which I found out only after I had taken a leave to adopt a child. And then my job was gone. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there. Just be careful. Bye.
Sherry, thanks very much for your phone call. Sarah?
Yeah, Sherry, I appreciate you weighing in with that perspective. And you know, that is an unfortunate reality that we've heard about, that that oftentimes there isn't a culture within that institution that wants to change. And so our goal at this moment, I think, in Lisa's and mine, is that we take the energy of this movement right now and really channel it into better recognition, better sensitivity, better communication within workplaces, so that everybody can feel like it's possible to have a please don't do that, that makes me uncomfortable conversation before it comes to the point of being harassment.
One of the important things for people to begin wrapping their head around is that sexual harassment does not just cause economic harm to the person who is being harassed. Over $300 billion annually is lost in the U.S. economy due to sexual harassment, and that is related to reduced productivity and increased absenteeism and workplaces where people aren't functioning well together. So all of those things, although I think it is common, we hear pretty frequently that HR departments are where sexual harassment claims go to die. That being said, I think there are very good HR professionals out there trying very hard to do their job well. But we do hear that concern often. And I hope what we're going – part of the discussion, the transition from people just publicly stating this has happened to actually trying to affect the culture in these organizations is to have HR departments and have employers and owners realize that it is in the company's best interest for these cultural problems and individuals who are creating the problem, which is the harassment – for that to be changed, because it is in the business's best interest for those things to be identified and addressed.
Let's turn to Allison in Richmond. Hi, Allison. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm calling actually in response to the gentleman who was talking about a friend who hugged someone at work. And as your guest mentioned, we can't really know what happened in that situation. But I'm personally thrilled that we're in a moment culturally where we're all taking a much closer look at our behavior in the workplace. I've been in the workforce for about 20 years, and I think back to my early days, 20 years old, being subjected to comments and awkward situations that maybe never really crossed the line, but really held me back professionally and made me second guess myself and feel vulnerable. And it really is the most vulnerable people in these organizations, young women particularly, women in, you know, economically vulnerable situations who are constantly forced to reexamine their behavior and make choices to keep themselves safe. And I think it's coming to be a moment where we're all now being asked to look at our professional behavior and make choices that are professional and make sure that our conduct is conducive with an environment where everyone can thrive. So, you know, I'm sorry that this is creating an uncomfortable dynamic for some people in the workplace who've traditionally held a lot of power, but it's really just a balancing of the forces and giving everybody an opportunity to prosper at work. And yes, we have to be a little bit more thoughtful about the choices that we make and the way that we interact with our colleagues. But if we're conducting ourselves with respect and being mindful, hopefully, you know, it's not going to be insurmountable, and we all will get to a better place where we can be in an equitable position in our professional environments.
Allison, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to Robert in Burlington. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Good.
I am listening to your program with great interest. As former executive director of the Vermont Human Rights Commission and now in private practice for 5 years here in Burlington, I've handled dozens of employment cases against the state. And the phrase, do not darken my doorstep, is all too familiar to me. And I do want to call the state out on this. Routinely, in attempting to negotiate resolutions of these claims, the state insists that the person not remain in the position from which they made the initial complaint and agree not to come back and work at any time in the future for the state of Vermont, which is a major employer in this state. Just had a case where it was proposed that my client not volunteer or contract with the state. So that knocks out a whole lot of employment opportunities. My fear is that it will have a chilling effect and does have a chilling effect on people who are suffering workplace harassment. If you know that by coming forward, you may lose your career, you might think twice or three times about coming forward. So I'd be interested in hearing your guest's comment on that. And thank you for the program.
All right, Robert, thanks for calling in. Sarah, what about Robert's thoughts?
So, you know, I think the if we accomplish anything in this conversation, simply turning this on its head and having us recognize that people who are calling out harassment ought to be lauded as heroes and as people who are being courageous in trying to correct a wrong in the workplace, as opposed to being held with some sort of punitive response for having brought forward this injustice. And I really appreciated Allison's way of saying it. You know, this is about being respectful, but about changing the dynamic that has existed for so long.
And this is a problem, as Robert is pointing out. It's not just private business. This is happening in state government.
Yeah, it's true. And this is, you know, when you start to talk with women about their experiences with sexual harassment, you realize how universally pervasive it is. I mean, Lisa and I have traded our stories. I was 13 or 14 working on the factory floor the first time somebody put his hands on me in the workplace. And I can tell you that has not changed in the 30 years since I was that age. And now is the time that we all need to recognize that we've all been a part of this. Time to correct.
Let's talk to John, who is calling from Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm just curious if we thinking we should take a minute or two and discuss what constitutes sexual harassment. I think the definition of sexual harassment has evolved a little over the years, and you know, we should explain and we should know what constitutes harassment.
Okay, John, thanks for your phone call. Lisa, we touched on this a little earlier in the program.
Yeah, we did touch on it briefly. It's such a spectrum of behavior that there really isn't one tight definition of harassment, but certainly unwelcome touching, asking a coworker, continuing to ask a coworker to become romantically involved when you have been told no once, displaying things of a sexual nature that in the workplace, obviously. People are going to have differing degrees of what they find acceptable and not acceptable. But I think we all need to show a little bit more sensitivity, realize that what may be acceptable for us, the way we talk outside the office, the way we are when we hang out with our buddies, that is not workplace behavior. And there are going to be people who are going to be offended by crass language or dirty jokes or to off-color comments being made about appearance. There's a whole spectrum that constitutes this, but I think it gets back to what Allison, the woman who called in a couple of callers ago, said. It's really coming down to showing respect and allowing people to have their dignity. And that isn't complicated. I think it's very easy for people to understand whether or not they're being respectful. And you can say something once and you can see a person's reaction and you know very well whether or not that was a welcomed comment, that whether or not they may have felt comfortable being able to respond to it. It's not difficult to tell when someone has felt that they've been put in a compromised situation.
And I think I would just bounce off of that and say I think we need to recognize that it's important for there to be that respect in the workplace so that an unwanted advance doesn't turn into harassment. A single episode is not likely to be harassment. Might more be assault. But a respectful environment will allow somebody to say no, thank you, and have that behavior stop.
And it also a lot of this is the leadership within an organization. If people working there feel as though harassing behavior is unacceptable, then their bystanders are going to feel much more comfortable speaking up when someone they do witness someone being subjected to harassment, and it's bystanders stepping in and gently saying something. Those small corrections allow people to self-correct, and we can create real cultural change that way.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at a bill introduced at the State House that provides additional protections for people who encounter sexual harassment in the workplace. With us today, Lisa Senecal, who is a member of the Vermont Commission on Women. She's also a co-founder of the Marin Group, a company that's dedicated to protecting the rights of women who have suffered physical, emotional, or economic harm due to sexual harassment and assault in the workplace. Also with us, Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland-Hansis, who was the lead sponsor of the bill. Let's talk to Laura in Burlington. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, and thank you, Lisa and Sarah, for the great work you're doing on this. Wanted to see if you could talk about the systematic issue that really is still designed to protect the perpetrators and accused and not the victims, and sort of the covert and overt ways that that appears both socially and then just in the professional workplace. For example, there was a big sponsor of a women's event who actually is defending someone in a harassment case. And so there are some things like that that still need to be broken down. But also, we are comprised of a lot of small towns, and when people come forward, you can't go get lost in a place like New York City. You end up running into these people in the grocery store or they're friends of your kids. And I think in Vermont, we have to face a lot of different unique situations in coming forward. And how can we be better protective of the people coming forward and not the adverse? Thank you.
Laura, thanks for your phone call very much. Lisa, earlier in the program, you said it's not like people are doing this and bringing cases because, you know, they want to.
Right.
They're feeling that they need to. And it's very difficult, as we had with that statistic of 75% of the people bringing sexual harassment cases getting retaliated against at work.
Exactly. And it goes beyond work. It's important that this conversation is now shifting from L.A., New York, Washington, D.C., and coming down to smaller communities now, because it is very different for victims of sexual harassment to be able to come forward in small towns. First, there may not be many employers. So if you lose your job, the ability to just switch, we have an example of a woman who was the only welder in a 100-person shop. The likelihood that she is going to leave one welding job and be able to very quickly find another welding job close by is highly unlikely. But beyond the situation with employers, when you're coming forward in a smaller community, it's very likely that you have friends in common with the harasser. Your kids may go to school together. You are going to see them at in social settings, at the grocery store. It's sort of around you all the time, every time you leave your home. So the disincentives in smaller communities can be even more intense than they are in large cities. You can get lost very easily walking out your door in New York. You can't do that in towns that have, you know, between 500 and 4,500 people in them.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Connor in Burlington. Hey, Connor, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that I myself was actually accused by a colleague of sexual harassment at my workplace, something I didn't expect, didn't see coming, and hadn't thought for a second that I was doing. But it was just to give you an idea between the accuser is a heterosexual male. I myself am a heterosexual male. And our workplace environment, we are nurses, and teasing is a pretty common behavior amongst nurses, sometimes pretty raw. And we had just been teasing him about something we thought was pretty minor. He was wearing some very tight scrubs that were quite revealing of his upper body, and we used to tease him about that. And he sent me an email saying, this constituted sexual harassment, and I never thought for a second that that was what I was doing. It wasn't me alone. It was sort of a cultural thing, but it really sensitized me to the fact that the definition of sexual harassment is a lot broader than I thought it was, and we all really need to sort of take a step back and look at ourselves, even if you don't think, even if you think you were a pretty well-behaved person, as I thought I was, you can still be doing something that might be offending or bothering someone. And we really need to just all take a close look at our own behavior and make those changes. Thank you.
So, Connor, was this a learning experience for you? You still there, Connor? I'm sorry, we've lost Connor. Sarah, we were talking about other parts of the bill, and non-disclosure agreements are very, very common in these situations when there is a settlement. Does that need to change?
Oh, I believe so. And the aspect of changing that non-disclosure agreement really kind of comes out of a sense of you know, justice for the person who has experienced harassment. If you sign a sexual harassment settlement agreement, and in that you decide, you know, mutually between you and your employer and the harasser that you'd all like this to be quiet and you'd like this to, you know, not be out there publicly, you know, let bygones be bygones. That settlement to me in a fair and equal world should mean this incident is done and there will be no future harassment by this person in this workplace. Both of those statements. If you have signed a non-disclosure agreement and you find that your harasser is continuing to harass someone else, to me, all bets are off. You know, fair is fair. If you want to put this behind us, then that means that your behavior needs to change as well. And so there's a kind of whistleblower protection provision in this that says your NDA works as long as the harassment is stopped.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Jim in Montpelier. Hi, Jim. What's on your mind today?
Hi. My question or suggestion is that does the bill contain a mandatory feature that all Vermont employers need to have a written sexual harassment policy and process? And then I would also ask that the Human Rights Commission play a role either in drafting a model policy or reviewing policies.
Okay, Jim, thanks for your phone call. Sarah?
So what I was aiming for in this bill was not to put new mandates on employers. And there are strong recommendations about doing sexual harassment prevention training, And making sure that employees are aware of what your reporting procedures are if you've experienced harassment. We have enhanced those recommendations, but not turned them into requirements. And part of that reason is that you get into arguing about, is that an undue burden for a business that only has, three or four employees? And I think that, as Lisa alluded to before, I think that there really is a kind of a common understanding of what constitutes harassment. And I think there's, we need to use that common sense and the respect that Allison alluded to just change the culture in terms of how we deal with it. And the point that was made by Connor before about feeling like he was accused of something that he had not intended to be harassment, I think as painful as that situation probably was for him, I would guess it probably was a learning experience. And I would call that a win, because if we can bring this energy to the point where we're now actually talking with each other about what's okay and what's not okay, then we're going to head off things that become harassment in the future.
So we're almost out of time, but give us an update of where this bill stands. I believe the House General Committee is taking a look at it. What's your hope for this year?
So the House General Committee has possession of the bill right now. My hope is that it will be passed out of committee in time to meet crossover, and that the provisions of the bill will head over to the Senate for their consideration.
So you feel strongly that you want to see the lawmakers deal with this issue this session?
Absolutely. Now is the time.
Lisa, what do you think the hopes are or the chances are that this is going to happen?
Oh, I'm incredibly optimistic. I think Vermont has a legacy of being a leader on civil rights issues. And this is another one of those issues. Every person should be free and unencumbered to be able to go out, do their job, support themselves, support their families, and it's a true economic issue. If we're concerned about creating jobs, allowing people to realize full economic potential, then we have to make sure that the workplaces are safe for everyone.
We'll certainly be following the progress of this bill in the coming weeks and as it gets voted out of House General and on the House floor and over to the Senate. Many thanks to our guests today, Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland-Hanzis and Lisa Senecal, who's a member of the Vermont Commission on Women. Thank you very much for coming by and discussing this issue with us.
Thank you so much for having us.